what's interesting for us is this. This was produced by sniffing a sample that had previously been classed as negative, but it kept coming out in between. So this is the sort of thing we want to understand, that what's with that sample. Now, we progressed the research with more, we increased the variables, and this is another. So we used multiple stents, we worked with different dogs, and also we used amylacetate instead of, at the moment, when the dogs screen real samples, we don't know exactly what the dogs pick up on. We don't, you know, it's not known. But if we use a substance that we know, we can control the concentration, and therefore we can control different conditions of the work. So this is substance, this is another dog working with three stents. Okay, so he stops in the middle, that's where he found it. Anyway, correct. Now, with these new conditions, added variables, I wanted to show you. We had sort of those patterns I just showed you, that, you know, with the different peaks, and we're starting to see them, you know, in other dogs as well, and there are different conditions. But first of all, I wanted to show you that although there are individual differences, this is from two different dogs, there is some, this is the positive sample, there is comparability between them, you know, and we're starting to see this, so what we call an entry feature, a main feature, and an exit feature. We're sort of starting to see these recurrent shapes. Now, at different concentrations, we see something like this. So this is the highest concentration. This is the positive. It came up a different color because it was in position one. This is a lower and a lower. So it seems as though the pattern is breaking up the lower the concentration. So that's quite, you know, it's just things we are starting to observe. And then this is an interesting thing, I think, but this is what we've just seen, and this is what we would call false positive. So the dog walks in, he thinks initially, so he behaves as though this is the positive. So he starts to see it, and then no click doesn't come, so it gets up and moves to the next. Here he signals like a proper, nice, positive pattern, but here it's all broken up. So behaviorally, he gave a signal of yes, but in fact, his interaction with the play tells a slightly different story. But when he comes to the last position and sits, that's the interaction with the plate is different, is more consistent with previous patterns. So to conclude this, then, this is what we think this is approach is buying us, what we're working towards, so to get to be able to get nuanced responses from the dogs, to allow them to, you know, to just respond spontaneously. And because we are computing these, then we can, you know, we can allow some sort of dog language to emerge of scent detection. But again, if we still think outside the human box, we can think of these as a, you know, things like this can help us think of different paradigms for also for interaction design in general. So imagine a doctor who is screening, you know, is looking at pictures of a scan, you know, of scans. And imagine a system that allows the dogs to classify them by sorting them with their finger, you know, so putting them in different places depending on how it touches them. Now, most of our computing systems use a symbolic interaction, even the touch screen ones. So they tend to try and normalize. They try to. There are conventional gestures that we can use. Although these gestures are based on our normal sort of the way we tend to express ourselves, but they're for the system. They are still conventional gestures. The tiny differences between you know a gesture that is a little bit stronger, a little bit weaker, they tend to be ignored. But what if we had systems that actually count these, you know, that instead of discounting these differences, minor differences, they actually try to interpret them and count them as a possible signal, for example, of the confidence of the doctor in something that he's seeing on a scan or not. So that's sort of, you know, that again, that's sort of just trying to think of interaction with systems in a different way. So while this is just to summarize, these are just three examples of things that we can think differently by looking at, you know, sort of interaction, interaction design beyond humans. But, you know, there is a lot more. But I just thought that this would perhaps provide us with some food for thought. And thank you very much for listening.